It's life on life's terms. Alright, here it is. Excited to be back. Life on Life's Terms podcast. I'm Tom Robinson.
Chris Mandeville. We're over here at the New Way Recovery Center in Quincy on Quincy Ave.
We're not affiliated with any 12-step program. Today we have Mike.
Hi, everyone. I'm Michael Rowan. I'm a guest of Chris and Tom's here today. I've been asked to come by and share a little bit of my experience in recovery, and I'll try and be brief, but see if we can cover everything. I got introduced to recovery probably in 1980 for the first time through the courts. I was having a little trouble with alcohol and some other things, some cocaine problems, and I was introduced to the Quincy court system. I was scheduled to go to a 30-week, once a week recovery program, and that's where the journey started. I didn't get sober then, but I guess that's where the seed was planted. That
outpatient.
It was a court-ordered program.
Was it MAP or something back then?
MAP, yep. MAP was the program. There was a guy named Leo who ran it and showed up with a bunch of people who were in various states of sobriety, and we all went out drinking afterwards. that's the way it started for me. I know a lot of those people are in jail. A couple of them are dead, and there's one guy that I still stay in touch with, and you know, he still seems to be doing all right, but, you know, the problems increased after that. I continued to drink. I continued to use drugs. I continued to pay the price, showing up in courtrooms and hospitals and places like that. And, I landed the job of a lifetime in 1986. July of 1986, they hired me at this company. And by October of that year, I was serving the first of many suspensions as a result of drinking and drugging. And, I have spent a lot of time on the bench in that job. And
I had a long way to go in 96.
86. A lot of 86.
86?
Yeah, so.
86.
Thank God for unions.
Just getting started.
Thank God for unions and benefits. And, I got to check in. I learned how to play the game in sobriety, like every time the trouble was coming, you know, and I was getting called on the carpet for poor performance or attendance. I'd check into a 30-day treatment program, and they'd pay for it, you know.
Oh, yeah. So, which probably was more difficult, made you continue to run back out there.
Yeah, until the end when, no one was reaching out their hand to help me anymore. The unions were done with me, and I finally had a family friend who told me, we'll save your job, but, if you mess up again, you're all done. So, I saw finally, whatever they call in the program, a moment of clarity. I saw what I had to lose, and everything that was worthwhile in my life at that time was hanging by a thread. My marriage was, I was newly married. That was not going to last much longer if I continued. My job certainly wasn't going to last any longer. And I became aware quickly that I wasn't going to be a guy who did well in prison or on the street, and that's where I was heading. So, I got sentenced to another EAP program at the company I work for, and it just seemed to click for me. Everything seemed to fall into place. I met a counselor who I clicked with. What he said to me seemed to make sense. I'm sure people had said the same stuff to me over the years, but I just realized that he had had an experience like I was having, and he found a way out of it.
Identified.
Yeah. You know what I mean? He identified with it, and more importantly, I guess, I identify with him, and everything else up to that point was just words, you know.
And it's crazy how that happens. Like, you've heard those things over and over prior to that moment.
Right. Sure.
You know, but at this time, it clicked and it stuck.
Right. It was a moment of clarity, right? And I'm sure I had been given that information before, but this time it meant something to me. And I saw what I had to lose if I continued, and I saw maybe what I could possibly gain if I straightened my life out. So I started, attending meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and getting outside help and stuff like that, and became very involved in my recovery. And, you know, lo and behold, the years started piling up. My marriage was saved, thank God. My job was saved. I went on to become a union rep for the company that I worked for, and recently retired from that company a couple of years ago. So, you know, in recovery for the better part of 24 years has its benefits. It has its benefits. I've met guys like Chris and Tom and hundreds of other people along the way that that showed, you know, that showed me that it could be done. And more importantly, that's what I try to do in this day and age. You know, you try and reach out your hand to someone who's struggling. The problem has come full circle, I guess, from when I got sober. I mean, I think I had the luxury, or if you want to call it a luxury, that, you know, I was drinking alcohol and doing cocaine. But if you didn't want to get sober, I mean, I could go out and get beat up again and pick up another court case and was able to come back. And we all know today that that's really not the same. You know, people go out today and get high
and die.
With this stuff and die. So there's not a lot of chances. So, you know, I'm fully aware of what it takes to stay sober, and I try and stay active in whatever programs I can, and you know, try and accept an invitation to something like this if it can help somebody and get the information out there. You know, I know that that there probably isn't anyone listening to this podcast or anyone that in this day and age that isn't either directly or indirectly affected by alcoholism or drug addiction. We all have a sibling, wife, husband, sister, brother, neighbor, coworker that's having a problem.
That's for sure.
You know, it's everywhere. It's so
rampant now. It's just
crazy. And
I
was talking earlier before we started with Corey, who works here, and you know, there's levels to this, and they talk about it in the literature, and like some people just catch the physical habit, and you know, when sufficient means is presented to them or consequences, they can stop.
Right.
You know, but I know from hearing you, and you know, all those Saturday mornings over at St. Anne's for years,
right?
That's not the case.
Yeah.
You know, for me or you. I believe Tom agrees with that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
recovery is possible. I mean, you know, in the experience I've had, you got to change the way you do business. You got to change your behaviors. You know, maybe change the people you hang around with. But, you know, my sponsor used to say to me, if someone wants to get sober, they want to get clean, you can't say anything wrong to them. If they're willing,
right,
then everything will make sense. And if it's a struggle, if I'm working with some guy and he's arguing and debating everything that I'm trying to tell him, then maybe it's not going to work. But, you know, like I mentioned, you don't get those second chances today. Everyone in this room has been to far too many wakes and funerals of good people, young people that, you know.
Well, that's the problem.
Price.
That's the problem because, you know, when to getting sober, you have to become willing. And what will make you willing is the pain of a long, prolonged, you know, run, you know, abusing drugs and alcohol and, you know, homelessness, jail, all this stuff that breaks the will of the alcoholic and, you know, generates that willingness.
Right.
And now, you know, people can be stubborn and not willing and they're dead.
Yeah.
That's it.
You know, and it's scary. And of course, it was like that before, but just it's just more common now that people are using opiates,
right?
And it's so dangerous. That's one thing. That was the first thing that was different when I finally did get sober. Was I became willing. There was a guy. We were in a house, and there was a room. We were in the room at night, and there was a dude who was hitting his knees. And he's like, "Hey, so you're supposed to pray on your knees." I goes, "Yeah, I'm gonna pray. I'm just gonna do it laying down. I know how to pray."
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Right. And then I was sitting there after probably for an hour or whatever it was, and it started to occur to me: how is it that I think I know better? Still.
Right.
After all the crap that I've been through and all the times I tried to get sober and all the pain that I've gone through and caused and all the person I've become who I can't stand, which was another thing, the identity piece is huge for me too. And it's like I got on my knees.
Yeah.
And I became willing right there to give up that stubbornness, that identity, that what I had, you know, in reserve.
Yeah.
Right. You know
all
what
that,
I mean?
All that crap that we think,
that
you know, makes us who we are.
Whatever it is, yeah.
Right. Well, my sponsor used to quickly point out to me, how well is your way working?
Yeah.
Anytime I would argue with him about something, you know, about the existence of God or the possibility of sobriety, he would say, well, your way certainly isn't working.
Yeah.
He'd say, why don't you try what I'm trying to tell you? He tried to teach me to incorporate the 12 steps in my life, try to develop some good habits, try and develop some spiritual principles. He said, you're loaded with bad habits. Why don't you try developing some good habits and become a slave to them? You know what I mean? He asked me if I prayed, and it was the only time I remember actually lying to him. I said, yes, I pray, but I didn't pray regularly. Mm. And he got me to pray. He got me to wake up every morning and touch base with whatever higher power it is you believe in. And that's the beauty of recovery. You don't have to believe in the same God I believe in.
Yeah,
you know, my sponsor, and I transfer this to people that I try to help, because my sponsor did it for me. When I, you know, denied or struggled with the existence of God or what God was doing for me, he used to say to me, you readily put your life in alcohol and drugs hands, right? You knew that would work.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
He
true.
Said, that's some form of higher power, right? He said, it's not a good one. But
certainly
it's a higher
more
power.
Powerful than me.
When you were jammed up when you needed a break and you needed relief and you went to that liquor store and you bought a bottle of vodka, you knew that that was going to work.
Yeah.
He said,
right.
You just have to find a different type of higher power that works for you. So, I mean, I struggled with that for a long time when he was trying to impart that wisdom to me. And finally he said to me, because I'd argue with him, I'd say, I don't believe in God. And then the next week I'd say, you know, look what God's doing to me. And he finally said to me, you know, you cannot believe, you cannot be mad at something you don't believe in. If you don't believe, then you don't believe. But if you're on the fence and you need to make that choice now that there's some kind of higher power that can work for you and you need to tap into that in order to save your life, you know. So he got me to do things that I was previously unwilling to do, right?
Yeah.
And then his final,
which is huge.
His final declaration to me was, Michael, he goes, the only thing I can't do for you, I can't give you willingness. I can give you help. I can give you guidance. I can give you information. He said, but I cannot do the 12 steps for you. And he said, you're going to continue to suffer from alcoholism. You'll definitely drink and drug again. And you'll probably die from alcoholism rather than with alcoholism. Right.
Mm-hmm,
and he
right.
said, so his final challenge to me was, do this work the way I asked you to do it. And at the end of it, tell me you still want to drink. He said, I'll buy you the first one. Right.
Yeah.
And I so desperately wanted to do that work and then throw it back in his face and say, see, it didn't work for me.
Yeah. See, you're wrong. Yeah. You're wrong.
I
you're
knew
wrong.
It.
You're
that's,
wrong.
That could be a motivating factor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't deny the existence or the way my life had changed when I did the things he asked me to do, you know. And it's been, you know, life ever since. But it's been a sober life, right? You know, I was able to raise my daughter, who's doing well. You know, I'm still married to the same woman who was really, to save her own skin, was ready to throw me out, and I don't blame her. You know, I know what it was like to live with me, and you know, and I thank God too. I'll give Al-Anon a plug too. My wife went to Al-Anon when I was struggling first getting sober.
Mm.
You know, and I remember her coming home one day, and I had used that day, and she asked me if I got high, and I said no. And I remember walking by the mirror, and I looked in the mirror, and I said, you're lying to the only person who is in your corner still.
Right.
And she had gone to one Al-Anon meeting at the request of my sponsor, and she said, you can get high again if you want, but you're not doing it in this house.
Yeah.
You're not going to do it here. Now, right. I didn't like Al-Anon at that time because I still wanted to run my
still
life the way
high,
I wanted
huh?
to do it, right?
Yep.
But I didn't want to be homeless either, so, you know, what was the better of the two, you know what I mean? I said, I better, you know, pay attention to my recovery. I'm going to be on the street, whatever. So, you know, after a few relapses, and I was able to put some time together and you know, lock down in AA and start to recover. So I became very involved in it in the early on. I was busy with a lot of stuff. I was in a lot of groups and served on a couple of committee positions. And when I was a year sober, I didn't even realize it. My wife said, you're coming up on a year. And I was as surprised as anyone because I had been busy in recovery, you know, going to meetings and doing what I was asked to do.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, I mean.
There you go.
You can you can stay so busy. Like, people that say they're bored or it's boring, you're not doing enough. Yeah. There's a whole world of, like, I'll talk to someone new or meet someone, and they don't even know what a service position is. Or they think that the meeting is as far as AA goes.
Right.
It's like, no. Well, let me just show you this.
You
like,
have to immerse yourselves, I mean, the commitments are unbelievable.
Commitments, that's assemblies.
Huge. Freaking such a huge thing.
Yeah. Conventions.
You get in somebody else's car. You park your car. You get in the. You get in somebody else's car. You'd have a conversation all the way down.
Yep.
You sit there and you go through the emotion of, am I going to get to speak? Am I not? Am I going to be first? Are they going to pick me first? And all that stuff.
Yep.
I remember so vividly, you know, in early sobriety. You know,
fear and anxiety. You want to know what that's like? Go to a commitment. Newly sober.
Right. Right.
And then you get back in the car and you drive all the way back, and you know, and you feel like, you know, and the. Everybody's nice to each other, you know. Nobody's like rude or anything to you usually, you know.
And that's how you get to know
each other's lives.
That's how you get to know the people in your group and you know, your fellow people in recovery, you know.
It's unbelievable.
And there's strength in numbers. When you're hanging around with people who are sober and everyone's trying, you know, even if you're not at a meeting, you're at a coffee shop talking about recovery and your experiences, and you know, someone at that table is going to help you through whatever it is you're going through. Like the sponsor said to me, there's nothing you're going to come up against in sobriety that someone in recovery hasn't gone through before.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
but you're not
going
to know that if you're sitting on the bench and you're doing it your way and going to meetings when you feel like it.
Yeah, and not talking about what's going on with you.
You got to get to know people.
You know
what I mean? Because, you know, I was brought up to not talk about that stuff, mask that stuff. You know what I mean? You seem weak if you talk about that stuff, and you know, people are there to help
too,
you. People are there to help you. And a lot of the kids today, again, I'm finding that they're getting addicted so young, whether it's through a sports industry, you know, injury, or they start taking pills in junior high, whatever it is, that when you ask them what they like to do, they don't even know. They've never done anything but, you know, get high, really.
Right.
They go to school and they kind of function through life, but, you know, do you like hockey? Do you like playing golf? Do you like, none of these kids know what they like to do.
Right.
So they get to try that stuff sober, you know. It's,
my God.
It's amazing to see people come out of it, and it's, you know, the numbers are devastating about the people who don't make it, but, you know, to see some kid, you know, 6 months later after you meet him at his first meeting, and he's, you know, his life's coming together, and he's grateful, and he's going to meetings, and he's trying to help someone else. That's the payoff for me, really. When I see someone, I try to help wherever I can, and you just do what you can. But until you reach that point where you're willing to, like, change the way you do business, I know for me that I always relapse when I didn't do what was asked of me to do in recovery. Maybe it didn't happen that day, that week, that month, but you know, for some trivial reason, the next thing you know, I got a drink in my hand, or I'm looking for drugs, and then that whole vicious cycle's happening again. You know.
Yeah.
It's just brutal. It's just brutal. My sponsor used to say, once you pick up, it's like having sex with a gorilla. It's not over until the gorilla says.
Yeah. That's one of my. It's one of my favorite lines.
I don't have any control.
True. I love that.
Yeah.
I've
brutal.
Said that, and people are like, like they can picture that.
Right.
Like, you know?
I don't want to picture that.
Yeah.
But
well, that's it.
I can understand the analogy. Yeah, it's that was like my last run. I was out there. There was no stopping. I was so afraid of what I was going to have to do next.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I mean, I wasn't going to be sick. And when I got arrested, I was just so happy. That's another thing. Like, I can't imagine if they decriminalized everything and that you didn't have the threat of jail and the whole thing. To me, because it was such a part of my story, it was such a part of me getting sober was the jail and the threat of jail and the court cases and all that crap and how bad it was and how I didn't want it and how it made me feel, you know, like when you're wrapped up in that, I mean. It's like life isn't even worth living. Like, why the hell am I doing this? You know, it just sucks. And I can't imagine if that wasn't there. I don't know. Maybe it would just purely be the emotional pain that would drive me to get sober.
And where else do you go from that, right? When you come into recovery, right, and you have all that baggage and that self-remorse and self-pity about the things we've done. You talk to any people who aren't addicts, right, or aren't alcoholics, they don't get it. My family didn't go. They said, what do you mean you did that for drugs? Or you?
Know, oh, yeah.
Oh, you know I know it,
but
yeah.
You come into a room full of addicts, and they go, yeah, I did that, and I've done
exactly.
worse than that.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you have to be around people who are like-minded. I come from a family who there's no one in my family that's alcoholic or addicts, and they didn't understand, you know. They were of the mindset, and I was too when I came in, that, you know, everyone that was involved with me, including myself in my addiction, you know, the message was, Michael needs to stop drinking.
Right. Right? Just
and
stop.
He's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Just stop.
And you
just
know what
stop.
Happens?
Yeah.
I stop drinking, and I'm okay for a while. I show up at work. I'm not getting in fights. I'm not getting arrested. But it does nothing to deal with my addiction and the underlying causes of that, right?
Yep.
And they were as surprised as I was that 6 months into it, next thing you know, they hear I'm drinking again, you know, and I couldn't explain to them why.
Yep.
You know, when I went out for a pizza and didn't make it home for 4 days,
right?
You know, that happened a lot. That happened a lot. And I said to my wife, I didn't mean to do that. And she would say to me, what do you mean you didn't mean to do that? This is the 100th time you've done it. But that's real. And if you're an alcoholic, I understand that. I don't pick up a drink to hurt people, right? But the problem is, when I pick up a drink, people I love get hurt because I can't go home. I don't go home. I don't show up when I'm supposed to, and I show up when I'm not supposed to, right?
Right.
So that's the magic to me of you know, these recovery programs, and whatever one works for you, it doesn't matter to me.
Yep,
they're the only people who understand what happens when I pick up a drink, right? And through Al-Anon, maybe other people can get a layman's view or a non-addict's understanding of what happens to a guy like me when I pick up, or people like us. But, you know, when you come into a meeting about and say, you know, I can't believe I stole, you know, money out of my mother's purse, or stole money from my grandmother, or stole checks out of the company account. And everyone says, yeah, why wouldn't you? That's how powerful addiction is. And people who don't suffer
for
from
sure.
it don't get it. Really it's, don't get it on that level.
Exactly. It, like, how they look at you, like, how could you do that?
Right.
Like, I don't know. I didn't even really think about it.
You know
it just happens.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
We don't want to. We don't want to hurt the people we love, but our addiction and what we're looking for takes precedence over anything in our life.
Absolutely.
Children, wives, jobs. Do not.
Right. Take care of that stuff after you get high.
Yeah.
I'll take care of that stuff after I'm drunk. I'll be fine. And I think, you know, it's just hardwired into you until you break it off, and then it'll come back if you start again.
And you have to look back at it sober to realize the full weight of how crazy your life becomes when you're addicted to drugs and alcohol. You know what I mean?
Yeah. In the midst of it, you think it's okay.
It's the only life you know when you're in it. And so you get sober and look back at it, right? You know, and I've met the greatest people in my life, bar none, in recovery, right? Mm. Very few people I've met in AA that I didn't like on some level, right? So there's not a moral judgment here, right? The stigma is brutal sometimes, but I've met the most morally sound people in my life in recovery programs, right? Who have done some very immoral things under the influence of drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, you get those chips. And my uncle said something funny. I mean, his son died of OD, and I was there.
Yeah.
And it's changed the couple of them forever. But anyway, my uncle says one time, this is like another cousin is struggling in and out, you know, and he's like, yeah, congratulations, you got a chip. You've done the right thing for a year. Well, where's my chip? I've been doing the right thing for 50 years. Where's my chip? You know what I mean?
Exactly right.
It's like, well, you don't get it. The chip isn't because you did the right thing. The chip is because you survived. You ended up, you know, totally going against the nature that you had or that you ingrained into yourself and surviving and not dying.
When you see people get it, people who have I've had the experience, I've got tons and tons of friends who have had brutal runs with alcohol and drugs, given up all kinds of opportunities that were presented to them because they couldn't get sober. And you give them sobriety and they take to it, and you give them a purpose and a reason to give back. Greatest people I ever met in my life. And the things they've accomplished sober are just amazing. Amazing.
Right.
To the point where I knew them when they were using, but the way they live their life now, when I look at them, it's hard for me to imagine that they had that life at
that
one time.
That they were
but
the
I
same
knew them.
Person.
But I knew them.
That's
because the things they're doing now are just so rewarding and so, you know, contradictory to that life of drugs and alcohol, you know. The greatest people I've ever met in my life, really, in recovery.
Yes. When you're using, you can't see it. You can't see it. As if you're underwater and you come up into sober, and then you can see everything. And you just can't imagine yourself without your safety blanket of using.
Yeah.
And it's such a lie. Yeah. You know?
And they can't see it when they're in it. When I'm talking to someone who's still using, and you're trying to show them how bad their life has gotten, and they go, well, you know, and what they settle for. You know, I've had friends of mine that are in these horrible living conditions, and they, you know, they lived in good families when I knew them growing up, and all of a sudden, over years and years of using and drinking and using drugs, they're in some shithole apartment or rooming house, and they said, you know, this isn't bad. And I'm like, it isn't bad, huh?
Well, I know.
It's not, out, it's not outside.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, you're not under a bridge, but.
But it ain't great. That's why I say that you have to get sober and get removed from the drugs and look back at that with a clear head. And it's astonishing. You know, I think about places I've ended up drinking, right? With no intention of ending up there, right? Next thing you know, I woke up in a bulkhead one morning. It was freezing cold out, raining, and I couldn't go home years ago. I was drunk. I crawled into this bulkhead to get out of the weather and fell asleep. And I woke up with freezing cold rain just running down the back of my shirt.
Oh.
Smashed my head and didn't know where I was. Came out of this person's bulkhead. Had no idea where I was. And that's just one of them.
Yeah, that exactly. That's just
stories.
One.
That's like blacking out.
Where
right?
am I?
I mean,
right?
must have been in a blackout or something. I heard a story once about the Four River. This guy, he was a machinist. Yeah, you're a machine. You were a machinist, right? So this guy comes in. He says he came into work in a blackout and he was the only one work on the weekend. They were doing this prototype or new brand new style hatch for a submarine.
Yeah,
made the whole thing in a blackout. Went home. He was gone for a couple days. Is it? Came back and everyone's congratulating him on the submarine hatch, and he says, I didn't remember making it at all.
Yeah.
And they used it like 200 guys in a submarine underneath the hatch that he did in the blackout. Oh,
right?
I called in sick to work and then showed up.
Yeah.
I won't be in tomorrow. And I showed up anyway.
I thought you weren't coming in.
What are you doing?
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
Yeah, who said that? Crazy. Yeah, I've had more experience. It's just insane what we put ourselves through. But, you know, to hear those stories and hear people recover is just as, you know, miraculous as anything else you've ever heard. It's the odds are so stacked against a lot of people, but it's doable. We all know people who have beaten the odds and gotten through this. You know,
I came out of a program with me and three other guys moved into an apartment. Three of us were heroin addicts.
Yeah.
One cocaine addict.
Yeah.
And all stayed sober.
That's amazing.
Right. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Pretty good. Yeah. Pretty good, but we were all wanted to stay sober. We were all doing the right thing. We were all holding each other accountable, and they taught me, which I wasn't. I was miserable. They taught me how to have a good time in sobriety.
Right,
it was a big part of it. You know, I was determined that I was going to walk through life. If I had to be miserable for the rest of my life, I still wasn't going to use.
Yep.
You know,
I've been there.
But they showed me a different way. We had a lot of good times, card games and. You know, going to all kinds of meetings and all that stuff, you know.
Yeah, it's a good life. It's a simple life, you know. I found my recovery is a lot more of, you know, getting rid of things in my life that were toxic rather than adding things. People think, I got to get sober, I got to get all this, I got to get the money and the job and the car and the house and all. Those things will happen if you stay clean. But, I mean, I had a lot of bad behaviors and bad beliefs that I didn't know were not healthy and I didn't know they weren't true. You know what I mean? I was full of bad information when I got here.
Right.
And the only reason I found that stuff was false was when my sponsor took me through the steps and I realized that some of my beliefs were wrong. My beliefs about myself, my beliefs about what other people thought of me, you know.
Well, I think one of the greatest gifts is the self-respect that you get. Like, you know, I mean, when they say you're a man of dignity and honor today, there's a lot of truth in that, you know what I mean? Sure. You feel good about yourself, and you're gonna carry yourself with dignity and honor, right?
Yep.
Right. Self-respect.
My sponsor used to say to me, "You always tried to get the best drugs you could get, or drink the best booze you could get. Why would you shortchange yourself on recovery? Do you know what I mean? Do you really want like a half-assed recovery?
Yeah.
You know, you want to have the best life you can have, you know? Because I always want the best for everyone else, right? And I think it's a common thread that runs through addicts and alcoholics. I'll do anything for you or for someone that needs help. But when it comes to me, I'm like, yeah, maybe not.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's funny how recovery is like that. Like, we don't think we're worth it.
Right.
Right. Right.
You know, we'll do anything for anyone else.
Yeah, go above and beyond for everybody else, but then...
When it comes to me, you know, I'll just let that bleed. I won't go to the hospital.
Yeah.
I don't need stitches.
Yep. You know, it's funny. I'm on a couple pages on Facebook, and I come across this thing yesterday, and the page is Opioid Crisis and Advocacy.
Right.
And it says, a non-addictive opioid painkiller with no side effects.
Right.
I commented, if you can feel high off it, it will be abused.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Like, they stumbled upon this. Like, the drug companies are still trying to...
find that magic pill.
Yeah.
What about this Ibogaine everybody's talking about? You're doing psilocybin or some sort of hallucinogenic, and it's going to... If it gets you off... opioids, that's fine. Are you going to be in recovery? Who knows? You know, you might end up a mess still. It depends on you an actual alcoholic?
Right. Exactly. Are you the hopeless variety? Or are you the hard drinker?
Yeah, right.
Right. Heavy drinker, yeah.
I mean, I think it's common. I was always looking for something to fix me. You know what I mean? I didn't want to feel what was coming. All right. I wanted to make the good times better. So I was always looking for something outside of me to fix me. You know, and I found that through recovery and doing the right thing and staying healthy and trying to practice the 12 steps, that, you know, I don't need anything to fix me. If I'm in trouble, then I got to look at it. You know, if I'm having a bad day or whatever, I got to look at what my part in that is.
Yeah.
You know, it always comes down to me. It really isn't what anyone else is doing. It's my resistance or my expectation of what they should be doing, you know. And, you know, they say live and let live, which to me means mind your own business unless you're asked, you know. And I mean, I'll tell anyone.
Yeah.
I'll help anyone that asks me, and if what I have to offer them isn't going to work for them, then I shake hands with them and, you know, try and be friends. But, you know, it doesn't work for everybody. You know, AA works, but does it work for everybody? No. You know, there's all kinds of ways to put your life back together, and you just got to find that what works for you. But it has to start with willingness, you know what I mean? You can't fix a problem unless you admit that there is one, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yes.
And you certainly can't fix it with the same head that created it.
Yep.
I made my life a mess, I know, by my actions and what I did. So I couldn't fix it with the same information I had. I had to stop using, I had to get new information, and I had to impart that information into my life. You know, and it was up touch and go for a little while, but once I saw the benefit of living, so first of all, I was going to lose anything I had, right? My marriage was going to be gone. My job was certainly going to be gone. You know, and I was able to keep it together with the help of a lot of good people. I don't claim to do it myself. I don't claim to stay sober myself. But, you know, we're in this together, and we're in with people who have suffered the same, you know, type of life that we suffered from under addiction and alcoholism. And, you know, they're willing to help, and they have real information that works. But
right. Well, that's an important point, because I think AA or 12-step programs in general get a bad rap because of, you know, you got people going in and out.
Right.
And they say, oh, well, I tried AA. It didn't work. And, okay, well, we'll put you down on the statistic list. You're on this column. Boom. You know, and then that person tries and goes in and out five times. He's on the bad column five times. He's on the gut sober column once. You know what I mean?
It's a pathway, right?
You can't go by statistics with something like that.
Oh no!
You know what I mean? It's here's the statistic for you. It has gotten or helped get millions of people to change their lives and stop using drugs and alcohol over the long term. Right. Millions,
right?
It's the best thing that has ever been created for people like us.
Yeah, you know, but I mean? Still only scratching the surface.
Right. You
need, still only a fraction of the world.
That's true.
It's so.
And there's a wrench for every night. But there's also, you know, there's I couldn't do just AA. I had to go to long-term treatment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yep. I had to get put away. I was away for 9 months.
Yeah. Right. I had to go to jail first and then go to treatment.
Right.
You know? Yeah. If yeah. I honestly, if I didn't have that time, and I asked for it, because I just proved to myself 2 months before that, if I leave this treatment center that I'm locked in for 30 days.
Yeah.
Right.
And use within 6 hours, then I get a problem.
Yep.
You know, I Absolutely. Could not use.
Absolutely.
And then they said, oh, we could probably get you out today. I was like, nope. Yep. Nope. Guilty. No, thank guilty. You. Thank I'll take the time.
Yeah.
You know, because yeah. that 30 days, I felt safe. Like I knew.
I totally know the feeling.
Yeah. Brother. I can't trust myself when I'm in new sobriety.
Yep.
I can't trust myself for a second. I'll use no matter what. You know, and that's what when people
those
say,
lies
don't pick up no matter what. I said, you don't understand. That's what I do.
Yeah, the lies up, that we tell
I
ourselves.
I pick up no matter what, and when it gets bad, I use more.
Yeah,
I don't say you know, how long is this going to feel bad? You know, how long is this going to last? But recovery works. You know, it's been proven time again. If you look at national averages, you probably wouldn't get out of bed in the morning and try and help. But locally, you can act. You can help people in your community. There's a lot you can do to help. And we're in the delivering the message business. My sponsor used to say to me, we don't write the paper, we just deliver it, right?
Yeah.
Whether anyone gets sober has got nothing to do with me, and whether they drink or get high again has got nothing to do with me either.
Yep.
But all I'm supposed to do is try. I mean, I look at my own record, right? I relapsed lots and lots of times. And not for the lack of people trying to help me. I just... You know, whatever you want to call it, took my will back or wasn't willing to do what these people asked me to do. And as a result of that, you know, I kept using. And the benefit of that is every time I got to come back to a recovery program, to AA or NA or whatever I was going to at the time, I became willing at that moment to do something that previous to that relapse I was unwilling to do.
Yeah,
whether it was get a sponsor, whether it was join a group.
Yeah.
Whether it was go to meetings every day, you know what I mean, or try and have some kind of faith. You know, so until the end where there was nothing, you know what I mean? My last excuse that I had was I'm not hurting anybody, right? And my poor wife came down to see me at a treatment center in Plymouth. We were married almost a year. It was her birthday, right? She came down to see her new husband in detox, right? This wasn't what she signed up for.
Right.
So we all sang happy birthday to her. You know, and she went out to the car, and I went back to my room, and I looked out. I tell this story every time I speak at a podium or wherever, and I saw my wife with her head in her hands crying, right? And it broke my heart. And I'm grateful that I was in a treatment center when that happened, because if I ever needed a drink, it was at that moment to kill that pain.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And then I went through the list. I talked to a counselor, and I said, I can't believe this, you know? I'm not hurting anybody, right? We've all said that. Leave me alone. I'm not hurting anybody.
That's right.
Well. Yeah. And I looked at all the people that had been hurt, my sister, my brothers, my mother and father, my friends that tried to help me, and I let them down. You know what I mean?
It's like the war cry of the alcoholic addict.
My sponsor used to say to me, when you decide it's a good idea to pick up, Michael, everyone else gets to take part in your relapse and your recovery. They all show up at the hospitals. They all get to see you in courtrooms and wherever else you end up, you know.
You might as well just go over to the people you love and start smacking them in the face and just saying, I'm not hurting you.
Right.
I'm not hurting you as you're smacking them, you know.
Yeah,
hitting
exactly.
them with a bat.
I have a friend.
It's such a lie.
Every time he speaks at a treatment center, he says, when you people leave here, when you think it's a good idea to use again, remember that everyone you love is strapped to your back when you jump off that cliff, and they get to come along for the ride, too.
That's you know a good one, I mean? Too. That's you know? Definitely true.
There's an older gentleman in one of the groups I belonged to years ago. He had 6 kids, and he used to say every time he spoke, he'd said, I had 8 people under my roof suffering from alcoholism, and I was the only one drinking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I know what that means. I know what that means.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It affects it, but... You know, the upside of that is when a guy in that environment, if you're a guy with a wife and 6 kids and you get sober, the whole dynamic of that family changes, right, when you stay sober.
Yeah.
All that hate and mistrust turns into love and turns into, you know, trusting, and they get their father back or their mother back or their brother back, and they become the greatest people that I've ever met, bar none, the people I've met in recovery and the things they've done, the families they've put back together. It's just astonishing. It's what keeps me going. when I see that, you know, when you can instill in someone that there's hope in recovery, and then you see them take that information and go with it, it's just beautiful to watch them raise kids or do whatever it is they do in life, start a business, you know, whatever the, whatever their dreams are, they certainly accomplish, you know, they can accomplish them in recovery.
And I've also seen people that have, you know, done amazing in recovery and got nothing back, you know?
Yeah, but they still stay sober.
Right, right. Yeah. Because, you know, we have a solution to everything.
At the end of the day, that has to be enough, right? If, you know, even if I have the worst day in my life, my sponsor said, if you can go to bed, you know, and say your prayers before you get into bed and you didn't get high or use that day, then that's a good day.
Yeah.
That's a good day, whether everything went your way or not, you know?
Yep.
I had a day like that today. Everything I touched broke.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, I'm like, well, that's the way it's supposed to be today.
Yeah.
You know?
All my prayers get answered. Sometimes the answer's no.
That's right. That's right.
Or not now.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Sometimes it's not no. Sometimes it's just not now.
It never happens in my time.
Yeah.
You know? It's,
thank God.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I want everything by Saturday.
Because I'd screw it up.
Yeah.
I'd screw it up. I would. You know,
thank God I didn't get my own way.
Yeah. When things are supposed to happen, they do.
Yeah.
But me being the alcoholic or addict that I am, I want it on my time.
Sure.
You know, and I throw the tantrum and piss and moan about it. But, you know, I've been through some crazy stuff in sobriety and
absolutely
not picked up.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Well, it becomes like foreign. It's like not even an option. Like, I mean, I understand that I'm very eligible to pick up.
Absolutely.
Time,
and, absolutely.
Know, if I delved into that thought pattern, I could go right back there.
Yeah.
But
I keep that up front.
Time, yeah. At the same time, it's like, it's not who I am or who I want to be. And I know there's no solution there. And it's just like, this really sucks. Like all the stress of having this hard time and, you know, having to leave my kid, my kid's house because me and his mother don't get along. And it's like those terrible thing that I'm putting him through in sobriety,
right?
But you know what, I didn't have to go use,
right?
Yeah,
that isn't even an option. That's what's it gonna do? It's not gonna do anything. But to get to that point, it took years.
Right,
it took a long time before I changed that part of me. It's like a piece of my identity that I had to give up.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, my identity before was when something's going wrong, I go out and use. I go out and do stuff. Or if something
without even a thought.
Without even a thought. That's what you do. If something needs to be celebrated, that's what you do.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? And it's just it's hard to it's hard to give up pieces of your identity.
Right.
You know, and it takes a while, but we, you know, like someone said, we know says the book, the mistakes have been made and the books have been written.
Yes, right. Yes.
I mean, I know I don't have to defend my sobriety to anyone, but I certainly have to protect it.
Yeah.
I don't have to explain to you why I don't want to sit where there's a lot of people drinking going on and maybe doing drugs. You know, if it's an occasion I have to be at, I go.
Yeah.
But when it's time to leave, I leave. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No one pays the price for that. But
that's
me, I'm not going to sit through that and risk, you know, leaving there angry and maybe picking up a drink or a drug. You know, so it's something. When I get that gift and realize that I had it and it was mine to protect, then that's what I do. I don't have to explain that to anybody. I don't have to defend that to anybody.
Yeah,
I like how you put that. It was yours to protect. That's a good. That's a good way to look at it. That's
and I've been in that situation.
Sure.
And had to make decisions that
right.
affected not only myself, you know,
right.
affected other people in my life. But I had to make that decision to protect it,
right?
Like you just said,
right?
You know,
who pays the price? You know,
yeah.
When I drink, I pay the ultimate price, but the other people around me suffer too. So.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't have to explain that to anyone. If you don't get it, then you don't get it.
You know, I can honestly say that I really only remember one time where I was really bothered, and it was a string of weddings that happened one summer, or a spring summer. It was like three weddings. And by the third wedding, I was just like, I can't do this. I can't take it. I'm here at the reception, and everybody's starting to drink, and I'm like, people are trying to get me to go on the dance floor. It's like, fuck you. I don't want to go on the dance floor. I don't want to watch you people drink. But it really has been the only time. And, you know, when I was rolling with the other guys who were sober, we went out west to California. We had a guy who worked for Apple. One of us worked for Apple, and he was getting trained in Silicon Valley. So we went all the way down the West Coast. We rented the car, and we went to a bunch of places, and you know, nightclubs and all this stuff. And we were having a great time. We were all sober. We were drinking Red Bulls, and we had no problem, no problem at all. But it's not for everybody. It's, you know, and that was, we were all over a year sober at that point, too. But we had a blast. But we were rolling together,
right,
as a group, you know.
Right.
And, oh, we used to go in town, go to shows. And people, oh, you can go there and not drink? Absolutely. I'm not, I'm there for whoever's playing or,
right.
you know.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
We've had some good times in sobriety, you know, doing the same things that I used to do so that I had an excuse to get messed up.
And you remember it.
Yeah, exactly.
You remember, know what I mean?
Right?
Yeah.
It's nice to remember that stuff.
You know, rolling around when we're in the group over in Lincoln Hancock.
Right.
You know? We did parties everywhere.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Christmas Eve.
Yep.
Or Christmas. People got nowhere to go. Open invites, you know? Right.
Yeah.
And have some of the best time, better than Christmases when I was a kid, you know? With people that I hardly even knew.
Yeah.
You know? But just amazing, you know.
That's how you get to know people.
Yeah.
Right? It's and they're the greatest people in the world. When I have a cookout every year for, I've been doing it for 20-plus years at, down in Quincy, and the sober people are the greatest people to invite. You know, when I asked my mother-in-law, it's her house, if I could do it, she said, who are you inviting here? I said, all my friends in recovery. So she's like, what, drunks and heroin addicts? I said, yeah, but they're sober. They bring stuff to the cookout. They help clean up.
That's
they're
right.
They're not rifling the medicine cabinet. You know what I mean?
Nothing's destroyed when they leave.
No wallets missing.
Yeah.
No
cans all over the lawn.
Yeah, no cops called.
Yeah.
<It's> Fights.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
So it's
a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful journey.
Yeah, you bet.
All right. Well, we did 46 minutes. You want to wrap it? Or?
Yeah. Sure, I appreciate being here. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah.
Hopefully
we
thanks a lot,
we
Mike.
Said some stuff that made sense, and you know, we look forward to continue this, and good luck to all you people out there struggling.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks, brother. Yeah. Appreciate it. That was a good one. All right. I live in this world full of anger and hate, and nobody is safe in this place overcome me. Trying to stay safe.